3, please. Pamela Johnson versus the Liberia Children's Hospital and Research Center. Counsel, you can proceed.
Thank you. Good morning. Raphael Taylor on behalf of the plaintiff appellant, Pamela Johnson. First, it should be noted that the district court in this matter erred in determining that Stevens was not a state actor. The test that should have been used or what should have been decided was whether a person possesses state authority and acts pursuant to that authority. If so, that action is state action. In this matter, Stevens, the security officer at La Rabida, was acting pursuant to Chicago Municipal Ordinance sections 4-340-010 and 4-340-100. Now, under the Chicago Municipal Ordinance, Stevens was required to uphold all the rules and regulations of a Chicago police officer. Further, he was vested with the powers of a Chicago police officer.
Let me ask you this. There was an alternative finding that, as a matter of law, the force applied here was not unreasonable. And there's no appeal of that alternative finding. So what does that mean to your case, even if you're correct on the state actor?
Well, Your Honor, it's Johnson's opinion that the notation that you speak of is merely dicta in this matter. It was not an official finding, and does not have procedural value as such, but again, is merely dicta. In terms of suggesting that there has been no argument or no appeal as to the constitutionality of the force that was used, I believe that's actually not a correct statement, because Johnson, in her response, does state that Stevens used excessive force, and I believe that is the response to the question of whether or not the force was constitutional. That also brings us to another issue that needs to be discussed, which is the matter of the discovery and the district court's decision to grant defendants' motion to stay discovery. The defendants filed their motion for summary judgment on January 24th of 2002. Also on that date, Johnson filed and served her notice of deposition for defendant Stevens in this case. Now, an important issue that really needs to be looked at is that in responding to the motion for summary judgment, based largely upon Stevens' version of events that took place, it would make sense that Johnson would need to at least be able to question Stevens regarding that sequence of events that took place, and was given no opportunity. On February 1st of 2002, a minute order was entered which granted defendant's motion to stay discovery without any response from
the defendant. She pled guilty to disorderly conduct, didn't she?
That is correct, Your Honor. In the complaint, it does state that she pled guilty to disorderly conduct, which states knowingly acted in such an unreasonable manner as to alarm another and to provoke a breach of the peace, to wit, came into La Rabida making threats of bodily harm to staff, battered a person, and created a dismay. One issue that we need to look at is that in Stephen's in his affidavit, which is attached to the defendant's brief supporting their motion for summary judgment, which I believe is record entry number 22, in his affidavit, he states if you were to look at page 2 of the affidavit, which is Exhibit B to the motion for summary judgment, paragraph 4, he states, if you look approximately 3/4 of the way down the page under paragraph 4, he states, determined not to become the latest victim of a disgruntled former employee's shooting spree, I instinctively reacted by striking Johnson in the forehead a single time with my left hand, my dominant hand, which held a radio. Now, if you look to Plaintiff Johnson's affidavit, which is attached to her response to the Local Rule 56.1, which I believe is record entry number 27, and you look to Exhibit 2, which has her affidavit attached, on page 3, paragraph 11, she states, at no time during the encounter at La Rabida did I possess a firearm or threaten to brandish a firearm. Now, this would be a contested material fact in this matter.
No, but if she did say she was going to shoot people, didn't she?
Excuse me?
She did say she was going to shoot someone?
No, did she ask
if anybody had, ask if they had guns? You better get a gun. Didn't she say that?
No, that is also a contested matter, Your Honor. There's no support that...
She contests the fact that she didn't threaten anybody.
That's correct. She contests that she did not have a firearm or threaten to use a firearm. Now,
she didn't do that, but she did say she was going to kill somebody, didn't she?
Pardon me?
Didn't she say she was going to kill somebody?
Your Honor...
I mean, I know she didn't have a gun, but that was part of the disturbance that she created when she arrived at the facility.
Johnson contests threatening to kill anyone.
Oh, but isn't that included, that sort of language included in the disorderly conduct charge to which she pled guilty?
Well, the charge is clear. It states, as I read... it does state threats of bodily harm to staff, but it does not state that she threatened to kill anyone, and Johnson does contest that she did threaten to kill anyone.
What did she threaten to do?
Your Honor, in this matter, she tried to get past Stephen, who was the security officer at the facility.
When she pled guilty, did the state make a offer of what their evidence would show?
No, they did not, Your Honor. There is no evidence to suggest that there was anything other than the vague statement.
Was this testimony recorded?
There was no testimony in this matter, Your Honor.
She just pled guilty and signed some papers?
That's correct.
What was on the charging document? Disorderly conduct.
The charging document stated disorderly conduct, and I can read it again. It is.
How did it say she was disorderly?
It says came into La Rabida making threats of bodily harm to the staff, battered a person, and created a dismay, which is a very general statement. But that is the statement that was presented in the charge and the statement that Johnson pled guilty to.
So she didn't say, quote, call the police, motherfucker, because I'm going to kill you.
That's quote, correct. Quote. She did not make that statement.
She's not admitting to making that.
Excuse me?
She's not admitting to making that statement.
That would be correct, Your Honor. Again, going back to the issue of the discovery. The motion to stay discovery was summarily granted, and Johnson was not given the opportunity to depose Defendant Stevens. As previously stated, there is contradictory statement as to a genuine issue. Stevens states that he struck Johnson based upon his fear of her using the gun that she had threatened to use. She states that she never threatened to use the gun and did not possess the gun. At that point, the motion for summary judgment should have been denied because there's a contradiction as to a genuine issue of material fact.
What do you suppose would have been reasonable force?
At this point, Your Honor, I would state that in terms of taking Ms. Johnson's position that she tried to escape Stephen's breath.
Well, she pled guilty to threatening and causing problems. I mean, what do you think would have been reasonable for us to stop her from doing the kind of activity she was doing?
Your Honor, possibly some type of a hold, possibly calling other persons there to assist Stephens in escorting Ms. Johnson from the building, but certainly a first reaction of striking her in the head with whatever he held in his hand, admittedly some type of radio device, would be excessive in this matter. And it still should be noted that there is even conflicting statements as to what occurred and why he used that force to begin with. He stated he used that force because he feared that she would use a gun, which he claims she did not have.
Counsel, you're into your rebuttal time.
Okay, Your Honor. I will then...
Now your time is up.
I will reserve then and come back for my rebuttal.
Your time is up.
Okay.
How much more time does he have?
Thank
we'll
you.
We'll give you one more minute after it's over. All right.
Good morning, Your Honors. Tom Lidbury for La Rabida Children's Hospital and for Tommy Stephens. I want to start out by talking about some of the things that Johnson did or didn't admit. The criminal plea refers back to the allegations in the complaint. And if you look in the record at defendant's brief in support of his motion for summary judgment, Exhibit H, you'll see the transcript of the hearing in the criminal court in the Illinois court where she stipulated to the facts as alleged in the complaint. So the admissions in the criminal court were to the specific allegations in the complaint, which we've heard this morning. The affidavit...
That being the quote that Judge Evans used as well as other...
Correct. Came to the facility, created dismay within, disorderly conduct, battery, threatening people, that stuff.
Well, I'm talking about specific facts, though.
I will kill you, innocent man.
That stuff is in... The more specific stuff is in the affidavits of Willie Williams and Tommy Stephens that we submitted with our brief in support of summary judgment. Plaintiff Johnson, in her affidavit, does not actually address those points. The counsel says that she disputes those things. Her affidavit doesn't. If you read it closely, she talks about, oh, I went there, I wanted to see Bill Koulios, and she just sort of skips over and ignores the specific allegations. Nowhere does she say, I did not threaten to kill Willie Williams, I didn't call him profane names, I didn't act like a maniac. She doesn't deny any of those things. All she really denies is that she threatened to brandish a firearm. Not a very important detail here, because deadly force wasn't used. She admits, there's no dispute, that she came there, acted like a maniac, and physically attacked Tommy Stephens. He reacted with a single blow. There's just no question that that could be reasonable. The district court found that it was reasonable, and that's not appealed. If you read Johnson's brief, there's not a word in the brief about that finding and why it's wrong or anything like that. So this case...
Well, Mr. Taylor says that's the dicta of that. So that's why it's not specifically addressed. I take it you disagree.
I disagree with it. It's an alternate holding. The court specifically mentioned it as an alternate holding. It's not dicta on some unrelated point. He said, if I didn't rule on this ground, I also would rule on this ground. He said that. That's the quote. I'm paraphrasing. I'm not quoting exactly, but that's what he said. So there's that entire aspect of the case that's not even appealed, and even if it were appealed, it's clearly correct. A single blow in response to a threat like this is not unreasonable. Counsel for Johnson makes this sound like, oh, there's a question here about whether Stephens really thought there was a gun, and he says that was his reason. It's an objective standard. Under the Supreme Court case of Graham, cited in our briefs, it's a completely objective standard. You don't ask what this particular person was thinking or whether he had malice or anything. What could an objective officer or security guard in these circumstances do? And we can all look at the objective circumstances. There's no real dispute about them because even what's purported to be disputed really isn't. There's no question that she committed these general crimes, which are admitted in the plea, and more specifically, she doesn't even refute in her affidavit the particular facts of what she did that the court in the criminal plea described as creating dismay and battery and threatening and things like that. So there's no question of circumstances, and there's no question that it was reasonable to strike her a single time to deal with her threat. As for state action, this court in Payton and on remand, it was decided or pointed out that if a security guard appointed under the Chicago ordinance does not actually have job authority, if there's restrictions imposed on that security guard as to what they can do, then that may not be state action. Well, here, Stevens didn't carry a gun. He didn't have handcuffs. He wasn't permitted to arrest anybody. His last recourse was to call 911. Before that, he was supposed to try to deal with the threat as best he could, and if he couldn't, if the person continued to be belligerent, his last and biggest recourse was supposed to be to dial 911. That's unlike in Payton, where these were armed guards with handcuffs who had authority to arrest, and the manuals there, the security manuals in the Payton case, talked about how to arrest people, what to do, how to eject them from the premises, and how to, you know, use force and things like that. It's not what Stevens' job description was. He walked around the facility, checked lights were out, looked for dangerous things like a spill or escorted people to their cars. These manuals are all in the record. They were produced. Written discovery was done. We produced all those documents, and Johnson used them in her brief to try to create the case. The fact of the matter is there was no authority to engage in police-type conduct.
Does the ordinance require any particular outward indication such as a sworn officer? I mean, the ordinance just says brings security guards within the ambulance.
It basically says that a security guard within the city of Chicago has to be licensed under that ordinance. It doesn't require them to do the things that it authorizes them to, or that gives them the power to do. It just says that they can. As far as discovery, I will point out that the plaintiff never submitted a Rule 56 affidavit in response to the summary judgment motion. This court has held that if a plaintiff doesn't avail themselves of Rule 56 F, it's not an abuse of discretion to proceed to hear the motion rather than continue discovery. On top of that, the discovery that Johnson says she wanted belatedly is just redundant, cumulative testimony about the same things we've already admitted in the record, and that there's plenty of evidence on, such as that the ordinance governs and things like that. In a reply brief on appeal for the first time, Johnson points out that she would have liked to have had documents pertaining to Stevens' training. If she had submitted a Rule 56 affidavit in the district court, we would have had an opportunity to point out that all such documents had already been produced. There's nothing out there left to be found. Unless there's any questions, that's all I have.
Thank you, counsel. 1 minute, please.
I'd just like to state again, generally, that the criminal plea that Johnson pled guilty to was just as was read, does not mention any specific act. Furthermore, it would again be stated that the excessive force item or the constitutionality of the force used, one, that it was the two, that Johnson did address that in her brief when addressing the excessive force issue. Furthermore, Larabita's claims that they limited Stevens' powers, I believe that those are overstretched because, again, the ordinance gives certain rights to persons under the Chicago Municipal Ordinance, and they did not restrict those. The fact that Stevens had no gun or handcuffs does not obscure the fact that he had the authority to decide how issues would be handled at the facility. And again, I would just like to state that had we been allowed to conduct discovery in this matter, we would have been able to question Stevens as to his training and his responsibilities under the ordinance and whether or not his powers had been limited. And I thank you very much for the additional time.
Thank you, counsel.